Picture yourself 15 miles north of a regional airport, not a massive hub, not a grass strip. One of those airports that serves a mid-sized city, scheduled airline service, a control tower, radar approach, the kind of airspace that shows up on your sectional as two solid magenta circles, one inside the other. You've got the chart open, you know there's Charlie airspace ahead, you've dialed in approach control and keyed the mic. The radio crackles back at you, and here's where the story splits into two versions. In one version, you're legal. In the other version, you just busted airspace, and the only thing separating those two versions is whether the controller said your call sign. I'm Pattern On Traffic Pattern here on Radio Hangar. Today we're talking about Class C airspace. Not just the shape of it on the chart, not just a list of requirements to memorize. We're going to talk about the specific thing that trips up more student pilots than almost any other airspace question. And more importantly, the thing that trips up actual certificated pilots on actual flights. Before we get into it, shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot? Instrument commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right. Let's walk through this together. Class C airspace surrounds airports with an operational control tower, radar approach control, and passenger volume that meets a specific threshold. We're talking about places like Albuquerque International, Pensacola International, Richmond, Tucson, Raleigh, Durham, cities big enough to have real airline traffic, small enough that they're not the monster class Bravo rings you'd find around Atlanta or Chicago. On your sectional, Class C shows up as those solid magenta circles. Two of them. The inner circle extends from the surface up to 4,000 feet above the airport elevation, typically 5 nautical miles out from the primary airport. The outer ring starts at 1,200 feet above the airport elevation and extends up to 4,000 feet, typically 10 nautical miles out. The exact altitudes shown on the chart are in mean sea level, so they'll vary depending on the elevation of the airport itself. The numbers inside each ring tell you the ceiling over the floor in hundreds of feet MSL. A 40 over 12 means that ring goes from 1200 MSL to 4000 MSL. There's also an outer area out to about 20 nautical miles from the airport. That's not depicted on the chart, no line for it. But within that outer area, approach control may already be working traffic and providing advisories. Getting on their frequency well before the depicted ring is always a good idea. Now here's the fundamental legal question. What do you actually need before you enter that depicted airspace? The answer is in FAR 9130. You must establish two-way radio communications with the ATC facility, providing air traffic services before entering Class C airspace, not before landing, before entering the airspace itself. And this is where it gets interesting, because what does establish two-way radio communications actually mean? Some students think it means the moment they key the mic, they've established communication. That's not it. Some students think it's like Class B, that they need an explicit clearance, a controller saying you're cleared to enter. That's also not it, and this is a big one worth spending a moment on. Class B is different from Class C in a fundamental way. In Class B, you need an explicit ATC clearance before you enter. The controller has to say the words cleared to enter Class Bravo airspace or equivalent. Two-way communication alone is not enough. In Class C, you don't need that explicit clearance. What you need is two-way radio communication established. Two different standards. Know which airspace you're in and what it requires. The difference between needing clearance and needing two-way communication, it is exactly the kind of thing an examiner will probe during your oral. So back to Class C two-way radio communication. What establishes it? Their response must include your call sign. Your call sign. Not just any response. Here's the scenario that catches people. You call. Roanoke Approach, Cessna 7147 Papa, 15 miles north, 3500, request transition through your Charlie airspace. Approach comes back. Aircraft calling Roanoke Approach, standby question. Have you established two-way radio communications? No, you have not. ATC acknowledged that someone called. They did not acknowledge you. They don't have your call sign on frequency. They said aircraft calling. That's a description of a category. That's not your call sign. You cannot enter Class C airspace in that situation. You have to wait. Same scenario. Different response. You call. Approach comes back. Cessna 7147 Papa. Roanoke Approach. Standby. Have you established two-way radio communications? Yes, you have. They said your call sign. Two-way communication is established. The fact that they told you to stand by doesn't change anything. They know who you are. You're on frequency. You can legally enter the airspace while you wait for further instructions. This is one of those things that feels like a trick question when you're studying for the written, but it has real consequences in the real world. Pilots have received enforcement actions for busting Class C airspace because they entered after hearing standby without their call sign. They thought they were in, they weren't. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Most students get this right on the written and then forget it the moment they're in the airplane. Because in the airplane you're scanning for traffic, you're managing altitude, you're holding a chart that's slowly trying to escape through the air vent. And when the radio finally says something, you hear standby and you think, great, they know I'm here, and you keep flying toward that magenta ring. Slow down. Listen for your N number, your call sign. That's the one piece of information that tells you where you stand legally. Now, let's talk about what happens if you call and call and just can't get a response. ATC gets busy. It happens. You might call three times and get nothing back. A few things to work through here. First, make sure you've got the right frequency. Check the sectional or the chart supplement for the approach control frequency for the direction you're coming from. Many Charlie airports have different frequencies for different arrival quadrants. Check that you've got the right one. If you genuinely cannot establish communication, you cannot enter the airspace hoping for the best. You need to work around it. Descend below the floor of the outer ring, which remember starts at 1200 feet AGL, reroute around the depicted ring, or turn back and sort it out before trying again. The inability to reach ATC is not authorization to enter. This is one of those scenarios worth briefing before you're cross-country, not dealing with for the first time at 10 miles out. Let's talk about what you're actually getting inside Class C airspace when it works the way it's supposed to. Radar traffic advisories, sequencing with other traffic, traffic calls. ATC is watching your radar return and giving you information. This is different from operating in Class G or the lower layers of Class E, where you're essentially on your own for see and avoid. In Charlie, someone is actively working you for VFR traffic. ATC is not providing guaranteed separation from other VFR aircraft the way they separate IFR traffic, but they are issuing traffic advisories. They're telling you about the regional jet 3 miles at your 10 o'clock. They're sequencing you behind the turboprop on a long final. That situational awareness has real value in a busy terminal environment. If you're transiting through rather than landing, let approach know that request VFR transition southbound, they'll route you through, probably assign an altitude and a heading, follow those instructions, talk back, and when they say frequency change approved or radar service terminated, you're done. If you're landing at the Charlie Airport, approach will eventually hand you off to the tower. Same aircraft, two controllers, approach gets you from the outer ring in to about 5 miles. Tower takes you from there to the runway. Normal handoff procedure, just like it sounds. Now let's talk about a few requirements that sometimes get overlooked. Transponder. You need an operating transponder with altitude encoding, mode C, inside Class C airspace. This is how ATC actually sees your altitude return on their radar scope. If your transponder isn't working, you've got a problem before you even make the call. Student pilot endorsements. This one comes up less often in briefings than it should. Student pilots can fly in Class C airspace, but FAR 6194 requires ground and flight training specific to that airspace and an endorsement from an authorized instructor for operations in the specific Class C area they're going to operate in or through. Not a general airspace endorsement, specific to that airport. CFIs, if you're listening, before you send a student solo on a cross-country that routes through or near a Charlie airport, confirm they have the endorsement. It's one of those things that doesn't come up until it comes up. One more geometric detail worth locking in before your check ride. The outer ring of Class C, the 10-mile ring, starts at 1,200 feet above the airport. That means the surface directly below the outer ring is not Class C. It might be Class E, it might be Class E, depending on the area. But below that 1,200-foot floor, you're outside the Class C laterally even though you're within the 10-mile radius. This matters for low-altitude operations. A helicopter flying at 500 feet, 8 miles from a Charlie airport, may technically be below the floor of the outer ring and not legally inside Class C. That pilot still needs to be avoiding traffic and ideally monitoring the frequency, but they're not inside the airspace in the regulatory sense. For your check ride, The examiner may pull out a sectional, point to a position, name an altitude, and ask whether you're inside Class C, know how to read the ceiling and floor numbers on the chart quickly and cleanly. Top number is the ceiling, bottom number is the floor. SFC means the floor is the surface. Practice reading those numbers until it's automatic. One last thing that students sometimes get blindsided by. Class C is only in effect when the control tower is operational. When the tower closes, the Class C airspace collapses. The regulatory framework reverts to whatever Class E or G underlies the Charlie at that location. You're still flying near an airport with potential traffic, but the requirement to contact approach before entering no longer applies because there's no approach to contact. Check the chart supplement before any night flight that routes through a Charlie airport. Tower hours are listed there. Some towers are 24 hours. Others close at 9 or 10 in the evening. Know what you're flying into before you get there. All right, back to where we started. Two solid magenta circles on a sectional. One radio call. The difference between legal and a bust is four words you need to hear from a controller before you cross that ring. Your call sign, the Airman Certification Standards, the Aeronautical Information Manual, and FAR 91430 all lay this out. The AIM covers Class C services and communication requirements in detail if you want to go deeper. Worth reading alongside your checkride prep. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Fly well.